What's up, guys? I'm Alex.
And I'm Corey.
And we're challenging you to think about gaming in a different way.
On this show, we'll talk about the games we love and why they're important.
This is Super Thought Bros.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Super Thought Bros podcast. Today's subject is one I'm very excited about. Alex and I are going to talk about our top five favorite games of all time. So
this was very stressful.
Yeah, I'm stressed. Just like I'm still stressed, actually. Even looking at my list, I feel like I tried to not give this a whole lot of power, even though it seems really aggressive. So I actually tried to like speed write my favorite games.
And just let it be and just whatever ends up coming be. Out.
Yeah, and then I kind of like, you know, attached meaning to stuff to whittle it down a little bit. But I couldn't come up with another way of doing it, you know?
That's fair. That means you're going right with your gut.
I'm going
and
with my gut.
And it's
going
to be super organic, and I can't wait to hear about it.
We love being organic. we're all organic here at the Super Thought Bros podcast. We are GMO-free.
Organic games only.
Oh my gosh, people hate us. So yeah, I also want to mention that for me and Alex, these are in no particular order because I feel like that would just add evil to what's already a challenging experience.
I think that would truly break my heart if I had to order these games.
100%. So we're not going to do that. We're just going to kind of go for it. So one of my favorite games in my top five, 2004. I was a big Xbox fan. Xbox Live was sort of like really getting into its groove, which for the casual gaming world, I feel like that was really the first foray into like internet gaming that was a little bit more accessible than computer gaming, because I don't think everyone did that at that point. The sequel to one of the biggest games, Halo. Halo 2 came out in 2004. Halo 2 sort of became my, really, for lack of a better term, my addiction. In 2004, let's see, I was like, what, 13-ish? So like just about to be in high school, you have nothing better to do. So I spent a lot of time playing Halo 2. Now, I was already sort of in love with Halo because Halo on the original Xbox. Do you remember LAN parties?
No, I don't.
Okay, so a LAN party, this is, we're going back. A LAN party was like before, really before Xbox Live, people would connect, like physically connect their Xboxes together.
No way.
With a network cable. Yeah, so like literally you have people in like a living room connecting their Xboxes with a cord and like different setups.
As a non-Xbox child, I did not even knew that was a thing.
Yeah, that was a thing. So that's how people played the original Halo. By the time we got to Halo 2, it was like, oh, we have the internet now. So that was a big deal. And I feel like a lot of the like community that I had behind playing games online was created with that game. And like I'm still playing games with other people. And Halo 2 for me was, along with being just like my favorite first-person shooter and just a really fun story with cool characters, it was my real introduction to that.
So it was your introduction to interactive online gaming and the gaming community, would you say?
Yeah, like paired with the fact that I was really good at it, you know, not to
that always feels better. Horn,
but like I was pretty good, yeah. Yeah. What about you?
Well, then I'm going to go into my version of that, I would say.
Oh.
You know, I do usually love storytelling games, but there is one competitive game series that I've played my whole life, and it culminated in December of 2018 with Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Oh, here we go.
I have always loved the Smash series, but when I saw the reflection of the Smash logo in Inkling's eyes for the reveal trailer, I knew it was going to be so special because,
oh my god, you're right, that's how they introduced that.
It was so amazing. It was revealed for later in the year too, which blew my mind. But you know, I've always played the Smash series ever since the beginning, and what I think is so special about Smash Ultimate, the Switch has been bringing together older gamers of my generation as well as bringing new ones into the fray, which is exactly what the Super Smash Brothers series does as a whole. So getting this game, that is on a console that is bringing together all these people and this game series that already brings together not only Nintendo fans, but because of the inclusion of so many third-party characters, like people that you would never think are going to be there. Joker is here from Persona 5. You know, Banjo and Kazooie are here. It's this celebration of gaming as a whole, especially after no one really played the game on the Wii U.
Sure.
I feel like because I was the only person in the world that had a Wii U.
It was you and oh my gosh, what's his name? The guy that created it. You and
Masahiro Sakurai. And
you and him.
We played online all the time.
Yes.
But after the Wii U, like, you know, Smash 4 on Wii U was great, but no one had that console. So they really felt like they had to up the ante in this game. So there's like 80 flipping characters in this game, so many different franchises. It's the biggest video game crossover in history, and every character in this game is created with such dedication to its source material. Every animation, attack, and taunt is crafted to make sure players know the personality of the fighter that they're using just from the way that they carry themselves.
Right, right.
And, you know, I've sunk 500 hours into Smash Ultimate. I play it every single day. I love it so much for what it represents for the gaming community and my integration into gaming history and understanding how all these characters fit into the bigger picture.
For the record, we're not going to turn this into another podcast where we talk about how good you are at this game and how sick of getting my ass beat I am. But that's okay. Okay, so here's my question. I feel like, so this is, it's one of those games that, like, for me, it cracked the top 10, mm-hmm. but I can honestly say that, like, other than the Mortal Kombat series, I'm actually not really a fighting game fan, per se.
Neither am I.
What is it about Smash Bros. That I think gets people who don't normally like the genre into it?
Well, I think it is, one, more colorful and more approachable than a lot of other fighting games. Yeah. In a lot of fighting games, there are these complicated combos that you need to know more or less.
But I would say the game, there are combos. They are complicated. Like,
yes, there certainly are combos that you can learn at a higher level, but to just pick up a controller and play at a casual level, all you really need to know is, like, where Falcon punches.
Right,
you know?
You can basically get by.
Yeah, you can get by as long as you're not falling off the stage. You can get by, and there's so many, like, characters from, whether you know, like, oh, there's Mario, that's fun, or you're like, Banjo and Kazooie, I played that with my younger brother when I was a kid. And there's all these characters as opposed to, you know, generic muscly dude and girl wearing skimpy
outfit
in other fighting
games. With its own
lore
and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go any further on this. They're adding characters. Everyone has mixed feelings about it. But I feel like it's cool that we have a game that creates, that generates that much excitement when characters or whatever are added to it. That's, to me, that's really cool.
Yeah, the hype cycle for Smash Ultimate was, I followed it so intently. Every single character announcement, every single assist trophy, every single, like, change in the game, I was like, whoa, that's amazing.
I mean, we were basically in the Newsies dressing room screaming like little girls when they announced Banjo-Kazooie. So that will be a fond memory of mine for a while.
There's something very special about Smash.
Moving to my next one, I want to paint this picture. So it's 2005 now, and we've had Xbox Live and online gaming for a couple years, and it's, for me, it felt really integrated. I was really into it. And mm-hmm. I remember being at GameStop, and somebody behind the counter was like, "Have you played Guitar Hero?" Yeah, you didn't see this one coming.
Oh, I'm ready.
And I go, in my head, I was like, "Guitar what?" He's like, "Yeah, you have, like, a guitar." And I thought he was saying, like, your character has one. And instantly I'm judging the game, the fictional game I've made up in my head, I'm judging it. And I'm like, what a dumb game. You're a guy that runs around with a guitar killing people. Like, I'm jumping to all these conclusions. And the guy goes, "No, you play with, like, an actual guitar. It's like a rhythm game." And I still was like, "I don't understand." And he's like, "Imagine Dance Dance Revolution, but it's a guitar." So I was like, okay, that's cool. So without having played it, I took this guy's word and I was like, "Hey, Mom, I want Guitar Hero for Christmas. I hear it's pretty cool." I get it. Christmas morning, It's amazing. I'm floored with how accessible it is without being, mm-hmm. I mean, like, definitely gets harder as the difficulty gets harder, but forgiving mm-hmm. enough to like pick it up. But more importantly, Guitar Hero being the first of that whole rhythm game section that kind of exploded with like Rock Band, created so many fun memories because it actually took me out of the online gaming part, and like I started inviting friends over. Obviously I wasn't uh-huh. I'm making it sound like I was a recluse. But I did, like, you know, it was a game you played in the same room with people, and you picked songs and it actually sort of increased my love for music because I was discovering music I wouldn't have normally listened to.
I've sunk a lot of hours into Guitar Hero 2 and 3 specifically, mm-hmm. and I gained a great appreciation for 70s, 80s, right? 90s rock that I never would have known otherwise.
I was like, how? I'll never worry about being in Rock of Ages because now I know the whole set list because of Guitar Hero 2.
That is so true. Good set list, man.
But I loved those games. I loved what it became. I mean, playing Rock Band with like three people and arguing about like who was going to sing vocals or drums or, you know, whatever, was like, those are memories I think that to me are so fun. And I was inspired by playing Guitar Hero. That's around the time I picked up the guitar, and I've been playing the guitar for, you know, 15
years. Did Guitar Hero inspire you to pick up the guitar?
Like, actually, yeah.
That's incredible.
I was like, wait, this is doable, which, like, I don't know if there's any actual like, you know, relatability, maybe in some sense, like, but it did inspire me, and I was like, I'm gonna play the guitar, and that's when I decided to do that. So thank you, Guitar Hero.
That's incredible. You know, I remember the game at first, when you first start playing it and you like look at an expert song, you're like, holy crap, there's no
your
way.
Brain's like, there's no way.
But what the game does really well is that, you know, there's this whole set of songs, and if you play through, they start off really easy on easy difficulty, and you're like, oh, this is so easy. But by the time that you've played through every song in the set list, by the way, the songs in the set list get more difficult as you go, as you finish every song in the set list on easy, you're ready for normal.
Mm-hmm.
By the time that you play through all of normal, as they get harder,
it does
the work for
very
you.
Well, too. And then they're like, add the orange button, and you're like, oh my god, I'm a real guitarist now, I'm using my pinky.
And that's interesting what you said, that it really does encourage local multiplayer and the sensation of, you know, what it's like to actually go to a concert with your friends. And except you guys are the rock stars instead of watching these
so
rock stars.
So many good memories. So many good memories.
Yeah, I have a lot of good memories of Guitar Hero as well. Moving on. So I got my PS4 to play Kingdom Hearts 3.
Here we go.
It was a game I waited for over 10 years, and I kept telling myself I wasn't going to get the PS4 just for it, but then I ended up doing it, and I was disappointed.
Oh, no.
I know. The game, understandably, didn't really live up to my expectations that had been accruing in my mind.
I blame the World of Frozen.
I just played through the World of Frozen on Twitch the other night, and not my favorite. Yeah. Anyways, this entry is actually not about Kingdom Hearts 3 or any Kingdom Hearts game, because I had this new PS4 and I didn't have anything else to play on it. So I went over to GameStop and I grabbed this game that I didn't really know too much about, but the style looked really cool. I liked the look of the turn-based combat, and the game blew my mind.
Oh.
That game was Persona 5.
Here it is.
The game follows the story of a kid who is falsely accused of sexual assault, and he has to relocate to a new town. And once he's there, he discovers he has an ability to go into a metaverse and dive into people's hearts. And he uses his powers to change the hearts of bad people. For example, the creepy gym teacher at the new school who's been sexually abusing the girls and physically abusing the boys. What I love about the game, many things. It doesn't mess around. It attacks serious issues at every turn, like rape, suicide, head on.
Jesus.
I really appreciate that. Within the very early parts of the game as well. The UI menus, the battle screens, are incredible. They could have just put up the words on the screen, but it's like you're reading through a comic book as you go through the menu screens to save your game, to change your weapons. It's so interactive and it's so beautiful. And the game takes place in real world Japan in Shibuya with real locations and pays homage to, you know, Japanese culture, society, and specifically what the developers feel is wrong with Japanese society. They focus a lot on how kids in the school system are under such intense pressure that they can't blossom into what they really are. So the concept of the game is that these kids put on these personas to say that they're okay, they're fine, and that they're conforming with society, even though underneath they feel like they're being pushed down and they need to rebel against these adults that are mistreating them.
Right.
And this goes into this whole concept of Carl Jung's theory of shadows and personas, these parts of ourselves that we push down and ignore, and it's a super fascinating concept. You know, the turn-based combat is really, really well done. There's so many mechanics in this game, but you never feel overwhelmed by them, and because they're introduced slowly so that, okay, now I've got the hold of this mechanic, and here's another one. And Morgana, who's your companion, who's a cat who turns into a bus and scolds you if you stay up too late, you know, like, what else could you want?
Alex gifted me this game, and I have yet to play it, to be completely honest, and I have every intention to, and I will. But one of the things that you mentioned, I think you said something like the main storyline somewhere around 60 hours?
Okay, 90, I would say.
You said 90. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought that was, like, complete at 100 hours. No, it's...
I would say the main plot will take you, if you don't speed through the cutscenes and the character dialogue, will take you 90
hours.
You have the
incredible ability, and here's how you and I are very different. Whether it's a, whether it's just an attention span thing or like an appreciation thing, I think that many of the games you enjoy are these like lengthier tales.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how, this is such a dumb question, but like how do you stay engaged with, like, if listeners are listening and they're wondering, like, I want to play these games, but I know it's going to take up this much time, do you ever find that you get, like, stale or...
In some games, yeah. But I think Persona, even though it is an incredibly long game, it respects your time and makes every single moment feel necessary and important to your growth as a character and as a fighter. For example, you know, if you want to do just a quick little thing, you know, you don't want to spend hours and hours today, you can just, you know, go to the shop and work your day job and make some money, or you can go hang out with your friend, develop your bond with them so that you have some benefits in the battlefield. So you can do these small bite-sized, the game never forces you to play for longer than like 45 minutes. At max, because there's spots to save and whatnot. And the world is so engaging. It's so unique. It's so fascinating. It draws you in really easily. And there are some games that I will play and I'll be like, okay, this is a long game. And I'm kind of like, this is a middle ground.
Like, I get the point. Right.
I get the point, and I'm like trying, I'm fighting to get through this, but it's kind of hard. I never felt that with Persona.
That's incredible for a game that long.
So much to the point that after I finished the 90-hour main story, without hesitation or blinking, I jumped right into a new game plus and started over.
God.
Without thinking,
insane.
Because I wasn't ready for that world to be over. It was so full, colorful, well thought out. There's meaning behind every little detail, and it's a great game. I will definitely do an episode on Persona at some point.
Next on my list is a game that I still... very important to me that I still play. We're jumping all the way up to 2016. For me, as an adult, and I think this is something we'll touch on a lot in the future, maybe its own episode, gaming as an adult is different, because you sometimes, like for me, I sometimes have to deal with the guilt of spending time doing something that other people would consider a waste of time.
Sure.
And I feel like, you know, when I watch TV, at least I can write that off as like, as an actor, I'm like, oh, it's research material, right? Like, I'm watching shows that maybe I could be in, maybe that's an argument I can make. With gaming, other than like voiceover stuff, it's harder to make the argument. So I have found, and obviously now I've compartmentalized that differently and I think of it differently, but for a while I sort of stopped playing games, I would say for maybe 3 or 4 years, I just wasn't really into it, trying to mm-hmm. be an adult, and that meant not spending money or time on games. A good friend of mine, Josh, who's a childhood friend of mine, was like, hey, there's this game coming out. You should buy it. I'm going to buy it too. It's made by Blizzard. They make World of Warcraft and that whole series. And he says it's called Overwatch. And I buy this game not knowing what to expect. Wow, just like Guitar Hero. What's up with me? Taking risks. And it's incredible. Overwatch, for those of you that don't play it, it's still very prevalent. It's actually one of the top esports games. So along with like League of Legends and that whole thing, it's one of the games that's televised nationally, internationally, actually. Mm-hmm. Overwatch is a first-person shooter meets, League of Legends type strategy game, meets Team Fortress type, character game. It's so much fun because unlike a traditional first-person shooter, your team is just so important. The composition of your team is required. And the goal of the game is not necessarily to kill the other team. It's really to complete the objective, which sometimes requires you to kill the other team. But it's about positioning and strategy. And the game, in ways that are very different than other online games, forces you to work together. It was the first game where I was like, oh my God, I cannot play this without a microphone. sometimes I would log on and play other online games kind of silently, mm-hmm. not using a mic. This game, you just can't succeed. You need the help. You need the coordination between all 5 players. So for that reason, it's cool. For kind of restarting my gaming obsession, it's really great. But really, it's been a way for me to play with friends I'm not near. I play this game with friends I have back home in California. I play this game with friends that I have in Texas. I have many friends that play this game because it's relatively accessible. And that's kind of how I hang out with these people. Like, we play this game and it's casual enough that we can talk while we do it. And for me, it's really important.
So as opposed to a game that's, one-on-one, like competitive Smashes, for example, it's a much more coordinated effort between everyone, and that feels like more of a bonding experience than just, it's just you and me in the ring against each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think with skill-based games that are one-on-one, there's absolutely some, there's some feel-good about defeating an opponent, but there's something about, specifically if we have a party of, 5 people and we are actual friends in real life, there's something fun about going against another team somewhere in the world and beating them. That camaraderie is just cool. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's really cool. Is it always 5 people? I'm not an Overwatch person.
The typical competitive mode that most people play is it's 5-on-5. So if you have 4 friends, it's the most ideal. But if you party up together, then be prepared. You're probably also going to get partied up against a group of people that are also in the same group.
Well, don't invite me because I will probably be running into the wall for the time. The first person perspective, I really don't.
And it's so different, sad. And that's okay.
And that's why we cover everything on this podcast.
Right.
Speaking of different games,
here we go.
That is another time suck game. This next game is something I actually almost didn't buy. I was trying to decide if I wanted to throw the money at it, and I had played 3 other games in the series of it on the 3DS, and I enjoyed them a lot, but I was kind of skeptical about the jump to the Switch.
Sure.
And then when the reviews came out, I caved and I bought it, and oh my God, I'm so glad I did. That game is Fire Emblem Three Houses. Here we go. So this game follows Byleth, who is in Smash now.
Corey
is not. Look, I'll come back to this later. But
no, I feel bad. I don't want to take.
I wanted Byleth to just be another skin for Robin. I didn't need him to be a whole nother character. But
I'm just saying the Fire Emblem Peanut Gallery must be very loud because they are convincing people. Yeah.
Well, it's a big deal in Japan. And Fire Emblem Three Houses definitely brought a lot more awareness of the series to the US, but it is like Dragon Quest, for example, a very big deal in Japan, and a lot of people in the West are kind of like, I don't know.
Right.
Anyways, so the game follows this character named Byleth, who's a teacher at a school for training new soldiers. And the gameplay takes the game takes place on a large continent that's divided into three distinct regions, aka the three houses at the school. And these three regions have been peaceful for a long time, but as that peace begins to be threatened, you have to decide which of the three sides you want to fight on and which students you want to lead into battle. Three Houses is, in my opinion, the definitive game in the tactics genre. I've never played a tactics game that is so deep, both in combat, storytelling, character arcs, and developments. You know, the game has three different branching storylines, and they all, after the first 12 chapters, are vastly different, engrossing in their own ways, and reveal what's going on in the plot in completely different ways. For example, after finishing, I did the Blue Lions playthrough on my first go-round, and I got some answers to what actually happened behind the scenes of the war and how it began, but I didn't really understand the full depth of the situation until I finished the conclusion of the Golden Deer storyline, and I was like, oh my gosh, there were so many things going on under the surface that I never would have known about I had just done one playthrough. And the way that I think this game keeps you coming back in, it's actually very similar to Persona because it has a time schedule, and you only have certain amounts of time every day that you can choose to use your time with.
I'm not sure about these games that have me on regiment. I have enough regiment in my life.
That's what I thought at first. The time systems, sure, like freaked me out, and then I was like, I love this.
It just brings me back to like Majora's Mask when I felt like everything was gonna crash.
That's kind of it's kind of like a modern day version of that ish. But you know, the game is long, but it makes you feel like you're constantly getting more skilled and powerful. You know, you level up pretty quickly, which allows you to carry better items, class up your units into a stronger class that allows them more movement and attacking options, and you can feel these improvements immediately on the battlefield. This was another instance of I can't put this game down syndrome on my list. You know, I spent 180 hours completing all four storylines, and even after that, again, I was sad for it to go, just like Persona, just because the characters, you get to know them so well. Every line is voice acted. They're all so different. There's different ones you identify with, and it creates this story about humanity in the face of death and you having to choose what you believe to fight in.
I think we talked about this last time. I love that they took the time to make every line voiceover. I don't know why. I love that a lot.
It's incredible.
Not just because work for more actors, but because that just goes to show the level of detail in the game. From the outside, I see similarities between this game and Persona, just in the way that you talk about it. I'm curious as to what you get that's different from this game that you don't get from Persona.
Well, one, it's totally different settings. You know, we're in a sort of medieval setting over there, and, you know, it's a classic story of war. And in Persona, we're in modern-day Japan, and you feel like this badass thief secret agent thing who's slinking around and taking down bad guys. It's just feels like different. They both feel epic, but Fire Emblem feels like you're in a war. You're in a full-on war. And the mechanics, you know, the way that you level up your characters, the way that you choose to spend your downtime, like at the monastery or in Shibuya in Persona, they're very closely related, and I guess I just really love that time mechanic. It makes you actively choose who are the characters that I really care about, that I really identify with, because I want to know them, and I might be sacrificing time with someone else.
Sure.
But I want
to. This is what's important.
This is what's important to me when I'm playing this game, and everyone will have a different experience of that.
What's important to me is my second game on this list, or I should say my fourth game on this list. I'm going to rewind a little bit back to 2005. Wow, 2004, 2005 have three of my top five. So I, as you can tell by the games on my list, I'm very much into competitive type games. I
couldn't tell.
I love whether it's team-based or one-on-one. I like those games. I'm sure there's some terrible deep-seated reasons as to why that appeals to me and other people, but we won't dive into that. But this next game sort of throws a wrench in that. It's a series I absolutely adore. It's a series many people adore. But for me, 2005 brought to the Nintendo DS Animal Crossing Wild World. And Animal Crossing is just such a fantastic experience. I'll call it an experience because the game, as many people will talk about, doesn't really have a clear objective. For those of you that have never played an Animal Crossing game, I first say to you, if you do choose to play it, keep an open mind. This is not a game where you're going to be forced into any type of linear story. There are no boss battles. It's rather relaxing. In Animal Crossing, you play as a character who moved to a town. Except your neighbors are not humans, they're animals. So you're the only human character. And your goal, if there is one, is to establish friendships with these characters, to pay your rent, which in retrospect is ridiculous, and to essentially build and upgrade your little village. And that's kind of it, which sounds so ridiculous if you've never played it. But I think once you get the charm behind it, and if you're somebody that enjoys collecting things and kind of making them your own, the game is really about just having a good time and sort of appreciating the little town you've built. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's a nice change of pace. I mean, this game is not about high achievement. It's sort of just about, like, how can you be creative and how can you create a little place that your character wants to hang out in? And on top of it, you know, in high school, I used to play this, and it was really, like, fun to play with friends. You could join. You could, like, visit each other's towns and run around, and it was just so mindless. I think sometimes you need those games.
Yeah, and it's a break from beat up the bad guys, save the world, yeah. Blah, 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 blah.
Everything's really serious.
Yeah, it's just, like, you're getting to make a home.
Yeah, and, like, the biggest problem you have is that Tom Nook is, like, trying to get his rent money, and you're just like, Tom, I promise I'll get you your money. Just...
Or we've talked about this, Corey. If you don't play the game for a little bit, your neighbors come out, and they're either really mad at you, or they're like, you hate me.
If you don't, and maybe this is like one secret toxic part of the game. If you don't play it, and you, so the game is real timing. I mean that in the sense that, like, if you turn Animal Crossing on at night, it's nighttime in the game. If you turn it on in the morning, it's morning. If you play the game during the winter months, there's snow in the game. It works based off a real clock. The downside to that is if you don't play the game for a while and you get back to it, your whole town is flipping out. They're like, where have you been? Like, and then, like, if they're really upset, they'll move. So you've come back and, like, and, like, people have moved, your friends have left you. It's really tragic. And now that I'm thinking about it, this is actually maybe the most serious of all the games.
Well, once New Horizons comes out, I'd love to do an episode on
isolation
and maintaining friendships. Stay tuned,
y'all. It's pretty important.
Here comes time suck number 3 on my
list.
Here
we go. Time suck number 3.
All of mine are time sucks except for Smash.
It seems that way.
Few games have made more impact on my emotional upbringing than Final Fantasy X. This was my first experience of a truly epic and cinematic game. And I got this game on a whim when I was in middle school because I thought the box art looked cool, not knowing anything about the Final Fantasy series. And it was a good impulse purchase. From the moment you start the game, you know it's going to be special. You see these group of travelers who are sitting next to a campfire amongst the remains of this ruined city, and they all look so discouraged and defeated while this fleetingly beautiful and delicate piano theme called Xanarkand plays in the background. And it's just a taste of the cinematic flair of this game. The game follows this civilization that's plagued by a monster called Sin, who is thought to be the embodiment of humankind's wrongdoings. And this monster constantly kills and destroys people and places within this world that's called Spira. And it's supposed to be a form of punishment for humans' beings' wrongdoings. And we follow this summoner called Yuna and her friends who are trying to defeat Sin. This game came out in 2001 on the PS2, and at the time, it was such a marvel of graphical creation. It made what I felt at the time like a truly interactive movie, something that I had not experienced in gaming before. And the world was so deep and tragic, and these characters felt so fleshed out, and it followed just this society that had to deal with this spiral, this cycle of death that never ended. And it was so heartbreaking to see people wrestle with and ultimately either accept or deny their mortality. There's just so many moments that, coupled with what is going on the screen and what the music is doing, that works so congruently, that creates, you know, what you would expect out of a movie. And, you know, at the time when this game came out, it was so beautiful. It was such a leap from Final Fantasy IX and the previous titles in the series. It created ambiance more than anything I had experienced in my gaming life up to my career. And
well, I think, too, at that point, we were getting to a place with gaming technology, too, that you could have mm-hmm. these cutscenes that were impactful for technological yeah. reasons, too, you know? It's not easy to make a game that's that beautiful and to combine it with a soundtrack that's beautiful. We weren't quite there until, wait, what year did it come out-ish? We're talking
2001, I believe.
Yeah, 2001. Yeah, so, like, right around the start of the PS2, when that
yeah.
becomes the newest, greatest thing. That's a big turning point, I think, for gaming. And you see sort of a lot of games, like I have a lot of games in the 2004-05 region too, because now gaming is starting to enter its heyday with games that are just graphically so pretty to look at.
Yeah, and I think Final Fantasy X was one of the first ones that people were like,
totally.
Oh my gosh, this isn't just like a blocky mess. This
right, no, it's beautiful.
This is beautiful.
I'm going to move on to my last one. So going way back, 1990, a year before I was born, this is the first game for me. It's Super Mario World for the SNES, kind of the godfather of platformer games. I know you could say that, you know, the Mario game before the original on NES would be the godfather, but I don't know. It felt a lot of people consider Super Mario World sort of the pinnacle of platformers. It was so well done and so beautifully colored. And I remember this, like I said, it's kind of my first memory of playing games. My brother, mm-hmm. who's older than me by 6 years, had the Super Nintendo with all the games. And I was young, you know, when I first discovered it. I think I was five or six. And I remember him leaving for school. And at that point, I was either not in school yet or, you know, in school only half day. Mm-hmm. And I would sneak into his room and try to configure the Super Nintendo so I could turn it on and play. And I did. I was savvy enough to figure it out. And I would sit in his room playing his game. And then, of course, I would get in trouble because I would leave it just an absolute mess. And, like, the cords would be dangling off the counter, and like the system would be all pulled out of its little storage compartment, and he would just be so upset. But on the same token, I remember such fond memories of playing with him. I would say my brother and I probably, we didn't play a whole lot of games together. We were sort of in different stages, and for whatever reason though, I remember playing this one with him. So it means a lot. And it's also, you know, the first time I remember playing games. It's how my whole love for gaming started.
Have you played the game recently?
I have, and yeah. Thankfully
it still holds up.
It absolutely holds up. Absolutely. The Nintendo folk decided to release a virtual console version of the SNES stuff, as you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect port, so you can, if you have a Switch in the online service right now, you can play Super Mario World along with another 25 SNES games and some NES games. So that's been a really cool feature.
It's so fascinating because I feel like for people who started gaming, you know, kind of today with the flashy graphics and everything, it's hard for them to truly appreciate some of the older games. And yeah, right. Some of them don't hold up quite as well, but, you know, Super Mario World is considered one of the greatest games ever.
Yes.
Partly because it still does hold up. The platforming is still so tight. The levels are so well designed. And even if you, like, re-release the game today and you know, called it an indie game. And
totally, I mean, look at a game like look at a game like Celeste. Like, if you feel and you use the word like tight, that's a really great way to describe it. But that kind of control over your character is something that we're seeing in 1990, which is incredible because we're still using and having success with that format today. But this isn't about Celeste. It's about the OG Super Mario World. That's the game I end with. Tell me about your last one.
Time Suck number 4.
Oh my God, there's a final Time Suck.
This one isn't as bad. Okay. Let's talk about game sequels. I feel like a lot of time they can't hold up to their original counterpart. They either try to change things that make the previous iteration special, or they can't quite live up to the magic that was captured in the first version of the game. I think one of the best, in my opinion, if not the best, game sequels of all time are Pokemon Silver, Gold, and Crystal.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I have grown up with Pokemon, quite literally. I'm what you would call a Gen 1-er. You know, I'm someone who played the first game when it came out and has watched the company blossom into the biggest multimedia corporation in the world, and I just played Sword and Shield. I've been there. I've missed one or two games in there, but I've been there pretty much the whole time. After Red, Blue, and Yellow, which was Generation 1, it looked really unlikely that the Pokemon series would go any further. Games did reasonably well. They were reviewed well, but it just looked like there was enough money to maybe pump out one more generation.
Sure. Not to mention the cards were doing so well that, like, you probably could have stopped making games and still had the same success with the series.
Totally. And the anime was doing well, but it just looked like maybe the games wasn't where the money was going to be for the Pokemon company. So Game Freak, with this idea that, you know, this could be our last one, let's put everything we have into it, into Gold and Silver. And wow. It was incredible. I mean, it was everything we loved about the first Pokemon game, but done even better. You know, if you go back and replay Generation 1 without the nostalgia goggles, it's glitchy as hell. There's a lot of problems with it. Like, the battles are much more balanced in Generation 2. If you recall, in Generation 1, psychic Pokemon were so freaking overpowered. You could blast through the whole game with a Kadabra or Alakazam. The story was so dark and engaging, and it felt much more dangerous than current day Pokemon games. Like,
sure,
your rival was this asshole that wanted this, you just wanted to stomp him into the ground only to find out later that he's so tortured because of who he is and his family upbringing. He's,
and that sort of went on to become a motif in the Pokemon series, right?
Well, not in recent generations. They kind of moved away from it, which is sad because, like, the rivals these days sometimes are a little bit of a pushovers, but in this game, the battles were really tough but fair, aside from that freaking Miltank that Whitney had at the third gym. And, you know, it gave us the invention of shiny Pokemon, which is, you know, still a thing in Pokemon games today. But the best part about the whole game is the post-game, because after you finish the Johto region and defeat the Elite Four, you go back to Kanto, which is the region from Red and Blue, and you relive all those gym battles, the Elite Four, you revisit all the cities, and then finally in the final boss, you take on Red, who is who your character was from the original game.
It's so cool.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Such a cool fan service to a T.
It really is.
And, you know, I go back to this game every once in a while, and it still holds up really well for when it was released in the 90s. I feel like, you know, Pokemon over the years has become a little more corporate, and I don't blame them for that because, you know, they make so much money from TV series, merchandise, Pokemon Go. There's there's so much, and I feel like the games have taken a back seat. I you know, Sword and Shield felt a little lazy / undercooked for me, but Gold and Silver and Crystal, specifically Crystal, that's the one that I played the most, I think those are the pinnacle of for all ages RPG that has things for older players but allows younger players to sink their teeth in.
I mean, yeah, Pokemon is the ultimate, like, this game is sort of for everyone because if you want to spend the game as a RPG aficionado which means like I'm interested in stat categories and
breeding
and breeding. All you that can stuff. You can do that. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody who's an action adventurer, you can walk around, explore, fight Pokemon. Like that sense is there. If you're somebody who's like, I just like collecting stuff, like it's arguably the best game for that in terms of actually collecting Pokemon. And I think that's kind of what has made Pokemon such a phenomenon, along with like, I think people genuinely just love the characters, like the actual pocket monsters themselves. But what is it? What is your hope? Because I think with any long running series, some part of you is like, it can't get better, can it? And without making this a review of the last one,
sure.
What do you hope to see from the future of a just such a large franchise?
Here's one of the problems that I've had with the most recent games. I feel like they're so specifically geared towards kids now.
Yeah.
That, here's the thing. I love Pokemon. I enjoyed Sword and Shield. I had a good time. But they're not going to have the same impact because the story felt low stakes. The story, specifically in Sword and Shield, was the most underbaked Pokemon story I think we've had maybe ever.
Sure.
They tried to throw in, you know, it's about these gym battles that are supposed to be like a European soccer league, which is cool, and it raises the stakes of the gym battles themselves, but there's no real threat of anything exterior. You don't feel like you're accomplishing anything bigger than just like trouncing gym leaders until the very end. They try and throw in a little bit of plot, but it's too little too late for me. It's and you know, like the teams, like Team Rocket, they're Team Rocket, Team Flare, like they're terrifying. They were terrifying. Yes. And you know, Team Yell and Team Skull are in Pokemon Sword and in Pokemon Sun and Moon are kind of meh. So yeah. I would love to see them capture that charm of gaming for not only kids but having something that it can appeal to adults as well. Because if I was not a Pokemon fan and I picked up Sword and Shield, I would have been like, this is not great.
So real quick before we go, honorable mentions. I'm just going to rattle a few off.
Do it.
Forza series. I'm a big racing fan. The Forza series is so fun. I love racing games. It's real. It's a simulator. It's great. Madden 10. I love sports games. Stopped playing them a lot. But Madden 10 was me and my friend Jonathan Gomez's favorite game to play online together. Grand Theft Auto, Vice City specifically. Fantastic soundtrack, so many good songs from the 80s, and I got to hear them all for the first time really playing that game. WWF No Mercy. I was a big wrestling fan growing up.
Oh, really?
So for the 64, I loved that game. I waited for that game for so long. What about you?
I've got a couple. First one is Kingdom Hearts 2. It almost found its place onto this list, but I think these other games, at its core, without my nostalgia goggles, are better games overall.
Sure.
Paper Mario is the game that I've probably played through the most, the original Paper Mario for Nintendo 64. I love that game. I think it adds so much character to a lot of Mario characters that have never had a character. Sly Cooper, specifically Sly Cooper 3
for the
PS3, was so fun. It was a stealth game. You pick pockets, you're a thief, and the characters were so fun. It felt like a cross between like a Banjo-Kazooie and a Prince of Persia. It was really, really fun. Celeste has made its way onto my favorite games. If you didn't listen to our episode about Celeste, go listen to it. I'll explain why I love it. And also Breath of the Wild would be right up there as well. We have also done an episode on that. Go listen to it.
I love it. So guys, a couple things. Alex has been streaming a little bit on our Twitch page. I will be joining the fun soon, TBA on the schedule, but we're going to try to get that out so that people can follow us. But yeah, great time. Once again, keep listening. If you have any comments or games you'd like us to do or ideas you have for us, send them our way.
Yeah, please.
But yeah, that's all we got. We're the Super Thought Bros. See you next time.
Bye.